I'm Peter Solomon. It's the morning show on Minnesota's Jazz Station 88.5. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to trumpeter Riley Moherker. He is both a solo artist and a member of a really interesting brass ensemble called the Westerlies that we're going to talk some about. Riley is playing at Berlin on the 15th of April, so that's coming up real soon. So I'm happy to have the chance to talk to him. Riley, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
So I would like to begin my conversations by asking you to talk a little bit about your personal evolution as a jazz artist. Can you talk to me about the music that you came up with and how you found the trumpet?
It started pretty early for me. I grew up in Seattle, and out there, there was a really strong music education scene in the public schools. I think back to hearing my babysitters playing in the high school jazz big band. And I went to this high school in Seattle called Garfield High School. It had a long history of music. Quincy Jones went there, and Ernestine Anderson, and Jimi Hendrix. And when I heard that band up close when I was young, you know, 7, 8 years old, they were playing Duke Ellington music. They were playing Count Basie music. So it was something about the feeling of that era of music, and also just the camaraderie that I could see in the band when I was up close experiencing it. That's what hooked me from early on. And then as I got older, I never even really thought about livelihood or whatnot. It was always just what I wanted to do, regardless of anything else.
Are there particular players or composers that were especially important to your development?
Yeah. I mean, if I think about my mentors in Seattle, growing up with folks like Wayne Horvitz, great pianist and composer, Robin Holcomb, great singer-songwriter, composer. Bill Frisell was in town. He was a big inspiration. And then by the time I got to high school, I became pretty close with Wynton Marsalis. And when I moved to New York, for the first couple of years, I was living next door to him. So he was a big mentor of mine as well. I think those were the biggest influences. And then, of course, you know, I would see everyone coming through town. So I would see Roy Hargrove when he would come to town, and I would go to the sound check, and I would go to every set for the week and hang out after. So similar with Terrence Blanchard or any number of other trumpet players specifically, because we're sort of like a family in that regard. Ron Miles is another name that comes to mind in terms of big influences, trumpet players who really shaped me.
He was wonderful. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because sometimes there's kind of a pastoral quality to some of the music you play that makes me think of Ron Miles a little bit.
Man, that's the highest compliment you could give. Thank you, Peter.
About the development of the Westerlies. This is a really interesting brass ensemble. The instrumentation itself is kind of unusual with two trumpets and two trombone players, and it's not necessarily just an ensemble that plays jazz. Can you talk about what played into the vision for the Westerlies and how you kind of explain it to people if they've never heard it before?
Well, it's a perfect segue talking about folks like Ron, Bill Frisell, Wayne Horvitz, because the Westerlies came straight out of that tradition. Originally, we were all friends from Seattle. We grew up together. We were all students of Wayne's. And we had this model from folks like Wayne and Bill of bands with unorthodox instrumentations. One of my favorite groups growing up was Wayne Horvitz's Gravitas Quartet, which had cello, Ron on trumpet, bassoon, and piano. I also loved Bill Frisell's quartet record with viola, guitar, cornet, and trombone. So it was the most normal thing in the world for us to see these bands of totally wacky instrumentations, but see the communication and the interplay and the improvisation, and also the sort of chamber music dialogue and feel to the music. So when we all moved to New York, we were hanging out together. We were just Seattle friends. And we thought, why don't we start playing some music together? And we used those folks as a model, started writing our own music, started arranging our own music. That was exactly, 15 years ago. And the first record we did was produced by Wayne, featuring his compositions. And that record came out when we were graduating from college. And we sort of had this decision to make of, should we see where this thing goes? And, we've been on that journey for 15 years now, and it's been a wild ride, and it just continues and continues.
I noticed that the most recent release from that ensemble features the music of Bill Frisell. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So we just put out a record a couple weeks ago, and it's called Have You Heard the Music of Bill Frisell, Volume 1. And this is part of a two-album project that we're doing this year, which is the 75th birth year of Bill Frisell. The origin of this music goes back to during the pandemic, the way that Bill was, keeping sane, was that he would wake up every day, he'd have a cup of coffee, and he would write a sketch of music. And he was writing so much music that it was more music than he could play. And we were keeping in touch with him at that time. And eventually we asked him, what are you doing with all these tunes you're writing? And before we knew it, he just sent us all of them and said, do whatever you want, explore it, have at it. And so we had a multi-year process of reading these sketches, arranging them, sharing them with Bill, and then eventually recording them. And so we just put out this first volume, which is all new works by Bill. And then we're pairing that with a volume 2 featuring arrangements of old Frisell tunes that we love, tunes that we consider standards, modern standards by Bill. Collectively, it's, just one big celebration of our love of Bill's music and the influence that it's had on us as a band.
You've got one album under your own name as a solo artist, and that's called Riley. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about the impetus for that recording? What were you going for?
Yeah, so Riley is my first album as a band leader under my own name. And this is the project that's coming to Berlin later this month. And it's a project that's, closest to my heart. It was a multi-year project of putting this album together. I was working with two producers who were close friends of mine, Rafiq Bhatia, who's perhaps best known for his work with the band Sun Lux, and Chris Patashall, great pianist, sound designer, producer, who will also be joining me at Berlin on piano. I always wanted to create a record that was completely my own and felt a bit autobiographical in a way. And that was the sort of the impetus for creating this music and putting it out. It has some original songs. It has some standards that we've reimagined. And the goal for us in this whole process was to put together a body of music and produce it in such a way that it would give the listener the feeling that I get when I hear jazz music, which sometimes meant, playing with electroacoustic elements or sound design techniques to manipulate the music, the arrangements, whatnot. The experience that the record gives and the experience we try to give in the live show as well is something that I'm really proud of.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting listening to how some of the production is paced. Like the very first tune, it starts out for the first half as a pretty straightforward solo blues statement, and then gradually there's more and more of these produced elements introduced. I was curious about your arrangement of King Porter's Stomp, because it sounds like that this is informed by the recording that Jelly Roll Morton made with King Oliver. it seems again like that it's sort of piecemeal. It's almost impressionistic the way the production sort of steps in.
What I hope comes through, and I'm so glad that you brought up that recording, is that my love for King Oliver, my love for Jelly Roll Morton, my love for that lineage of the music is so strong. And so when we were creating that arrangement, we wanted it to be so true to the feeling that that music gives me. But then approaching the arrangement and the production more and more of a sort of archaeological way of excavating what is at the heart of this song that gives us this feeling. How can we surround that material with all sorts of things that to us like enhance, almost like viewing it with a microscope or viewing it with different filters, and leave the listener in a hopefully surprising place.
It's interesting to me, like, the difference in the workflow for creating music, say from a hip hop producer, someone like that, who's working with existing musical material. Whereas, you know, in a conventional jazz quartet or even a solo performance, the artist is improvising in the moment. So can you kind of talk about that difference of capturing the moment versus manipulating the moment?
Yeah, I think for this body of music, the recording process was very through composed in that sense. You know, what I'm playing on a song like King Porter, there's a lot of improvisation in that, the same way Jelly Roll Morton would approach it. But a lot of the decisions are quite thought out, and we spend a lot of time shaping the production elements and the compositional, you know, the arrangement of it. But that's what also what makes playing this music live so much more fun, because when we're live, the record is just sort of the jumping off point in terms of that's how we did it that one day. And then it goes in any number of directions when that exchange is happening with an audience.
So at the beginning of our conversation, I mentioned your upcoming appearance in Berlin on April 15th. And can you talk about the people you're going to be playing with and the repertoire you're planning to perform?
Yeah. So one thing that's been so fun about this journey is that once the album came out and we were able to start to tour it, we had a band really come together. And we first came together playing the music from the record. And now that band has sort of taken on a life of its own. And we've already started recording the next record, and we've got some music to share from that as well. But the band at its core is Chris Padishall, who was a producer of both records on piano, and Barry Stevenson on bass. And then on drums, an old friend of mine, Jason Berger, who is an incredible sound artist behind the drums and has just as much experience in the worlds of indie rock and folk music as he does in the jazz world, which makes me feel really lucky to have all those sound palettes available when we're doing this live.
Thank you so much for joining me, Riley. I've been enjoying listening to your music, and I hope to be able to come and catch you at Berlin.
Thank you, Peter. It's a privilege.